Cape Town, as is so much in Cape Town, him and the team. So we will take that opportunity then, TG. But today we want to hear what money that Manuel Resources has, and is it enough, and your plan, your TG plan, how will it assist us in Parliament, how will it assist the workings, and how will our communities benefit from that. So, my name is Freddie Adams. I am from the Republic of the Western Cape. It's going to be declared a full-fledged republic after the win of the Democratic Alliance. And I'm chairperson of the Committee on Economic Development, which includes economic development, mineral resources, and energy. Let me start to my right, the gentleman here.
My name is Bafnani Aaron Nguni from the Free State.
Good morning, I'm Elsa Finlingen from the Eastern Cape.
Sanbonani, Ngisuwe, a kingdom ya KwaZulu Natal, or say on the Republic.
Good morning, my name is Dave Abrams from Kaohsiung in Cape Town, yes, of course, thank you.
Tumpan Kameze from KwaZulu Natal.
Sayram, PNG.
I'm Sally Venusina from the Democratic Republic of South Africa.
Ben Rangimana, PMR.
Yeah, I nearly thought you said that you're from the Democratic Republic of DMR.
In my country, elections are conducted every 5 years, and that is enforced by constitution. So that's why it's a Democratic Republic.
We also want to welcome our honorable Clara Tihali, but I think she can just introduce herself. From which province? And,
I am Matipa Kodekhala from Limpopo province.
And she's also the mother of Julius Malema, is that still correct?
Oh, yes. Bye-bye.
So thank you very much, honorable members and DG and staff. Members, without further ado, we're going to hand over to the DG and team to take us through the presentation. DG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Firstly, let me apologize for the Minister of Mineral Resources, who will be joining us in a few minutes' time. She is still held up. We apologize for her being delayed. Chairperson, honorable members, our mandate as a department is to ensure that we use our oversight over the country's mineral resources to effect transformation, the safety and sustainability, as well as the economic growth of the mining industry. Our mission is to regulate the sector to the benefit of all our citizens. In keeping with government's long-term commitments, we have developed Vision 2014 and Vision 2025. These aim to create a mining in jurisprudence that is globally competitive. Mining meaningfully to the government's overall objectives of job creation and the eradication of poverty. Our strategic outcomes are aimed at ensuring that the sluggish nature of the investment in the mining industry of the past is reversed. We are committed to doing everything possible to improve our regulatory environment while aligning our outcomes with the national priorities of government. The performance of the mining industry in the period under review demonstrates that there is significant recovery from the recent global economic and financial crisis. The 2010 performance report is underpinned by signals of positivity in the global economy, as supported by a series of upwardly revised economic forecasts, with the global GDP expected to exceed 4% by 2012, while the aggregated GDP of emerging economies will average 7.5% by next year. This optimistic outlook reinforces the demand growth expectation for mineral commodities, which is being essentially driven by both fiscal expenditure in most developing economies and rapidly growing household consumption. Our strategic plan presentation demonstrates our efforts to locate our industry well within the broader economic growth paradigm, while it contributes towards addressing the fundamental socio-economic challenges facing South Africa, including, among others, increasing economic activity, creating job opportunities, and environmental efficiency. It should be noted that the aggregated extraction rate in South Africa grew at about 5.8% relative to the contraction experienced in the preceding year. As anticipated, employment in the mining industry shrank by 5.1% in 2009. Even while this was happening, the employment of women grew by 11% in the same year. Though this starts from a low base, it is, however, a proverbial first step in a journey of 1,000 miles to a society that does not discriminate on the basis of gender. In 2010, total employment grew by 1.2%, with women employment growing by 15.6%. Total employment in mining reached 498,055, falling marginally short of breaking through the 500,000 threshold. In fact, the industry's employment figures improved by 27% from 2001 to 2008, thereby creating an additional 101,170 jobs in a period of 8 years. The department, through the Mining Industry Growth Development and Employment Task Team, MIGDEF, has developed a mining sector strategy. This identifies constraints to the potential for growth of the sector and recommends remedial action to optimize its extractive capacity, investment, as well as its job creation potential. It has an annual target of 4 to 7% in volume growth, 10% in gross fixed capital investment, and 8 to 10% in employment growth. As part of its approach, MIGDEF has set up several task teams to look into issues such as job creation, infrastructure, exploration, innovation, and human resource development. These are all the areas that we think need to be addressed for us to be able to spur on growth in the mining industry in South Africa. These interventions are linked to the government's new growth path, in which the mining sector is demonstrated to have the potential to create 140,000 direct jobs. This year, we will continue with these interventions, and we will link them up with the Industrial Action Plan, IPAP 2, so that this sector does not suffer from the same fate in missing out on the next commodity boom. The interventions include those not limited to the following. The National Mining Sector Strategy. We have developed a strategy for sustainable growth and meaningful transformation of South Africa. This strategy recommends ways of mitigating constraints and emphasizes the need to approach competitiveness and transformation as two sides of the same coin. The strategy is currently going through the cabinet processes. We expect that it will be approved by June this year. Number two is the beneficiation strategy. These have been presented to the IMC on economic development, employment, and infrastructure. We have finalized the consultation process with all the stakeholders. In a bid to expedite the adoption of the strategy. The document has been resubmitted for consideration and approval by Cabinet, and we hope that during the first Cabinet sitting after the election, the strategy will be considered by Cabinet. Number three is the amendment of the Mining Charter and the NPRPA. The amendment of the Mining Charter was concluded in September last year, following rigorous assessment of the impact of the original charter. The amended charter removes ambiguities that cause various interpretations and also introduces an improved scorecard with clear performance targets. The mining industry is expected to comply with the requirements of this document from 13th September 2010, and the first compliance reports from mining companies are expected by the end of June 2011. The review of the MPRP, the honourable members will notice that the revised charter requires an annual review of the charter, an annual submission of reports by the players in the industry, unlike the previous one, which required that we had to do that in 5 years' time. The review of the NPRPA is currently underway, aimed at improving the current construct of the Act to remove ambiguities, make provision for consultation processes, enhance punitive measures, as well as streamline licensing processes, including providing for the regulation of the environment in respect of minerals and mining. We continue to consult with all the affected and interested stakeholders. Accordingly, we expect that the amendment bill will serve before Parliament by the end of this year, if all goes well. Number four is the state-owned mining company. The Cabinet has authorized us to use African Exploration Mining and Financing (BTYLTD) as the nucleus for the establishment of the state-owned mining company. The work of hiving off the AEMFC from its current wholly owned status in the Central Energy Fund is already at an advanced stage. This will culminate in establishment of the AEMFC as a standalone entity. Number five, small-scale mining strategy and way forward. We have in place a small-scale mining strategy which provides a framework for the creation of a sustainable sector which should be characterized by growth and development. We will use this to contribute to rural development, job creation, and poverty eradication. This will be carried out through community-linked SME projects. Also, small-scale mining projects that fall within the presidential poverty law will receive special attention during this financial year. We will identify and demarcate areas that have mineral deposits. We will use the potential of these areas to ensure that with the formation of community clusters, we achieve economies of scale and scope. Special attention will be paid to linking DMR-supported initiatives and small-scale mining projects with financial institutions. This is a job creation process that is currently underway. Number six, management of derelict and ownerless mines. The management of derelict and ownerless mines is a key deliverable of the Department of Mineral Resources, given the serious challenges that the country is facing. The Minister has approved a scientific strategy for this. As part of the rehabilitation program, 5 sites were rehabilitated during the 2010-2011 financial year, and 10 sites are targeted for the current financial year. The acid mine drainage, that's number 7. This is an issue that has dominated public discourse. We have worked with all the affected parties and departments and prepared a report on the matter, which was presented and approved by the Cabinet. During 2011-2012 financial year, we plan to continue conducting research on mine water ingress as well as implementing solutions. This would include constructing canals and filling abandoned shafts and trenches which contribute to the high volumes of water passing underground with invariable, which invariably generate acid mine drainage. I would like again to point out to the honorable members that the whenever we make a presentation about our budget, people always ask questions as to why we have not budgeted. We have not budgeted for the asset mine drainage. It is indeed not the main responsibility of the DMR. We play a supportive role to other government departments. Number 8, mineral regulation administrative processes. On the 18th of April 2011, our minister unveiled the new licensing system aimed at streamlining administrative processes to ensure the attractiveness of our country as a mining destination. This was preceded by a moratorium which the minister has lifted, except in Mpumalanga, where it will remain in place until the end of September this year. For ease of reference on this important issue, we have circulated the full text of the minister's speech, which explains the process in detail. We can engage honorable members on the minister's address should the need arise. Basically, this is an electronic licensing system, which will now enable us to do all the administrative processes germane to licensing through an electronic system. And we were having a discussion earlier with the honorable member here about the teething problems that all the electronic systems normally have, even the ones that are regarded to be the best in the world. And of course, even this one of ours at the beginning, more particularly on the first day, it did experience some teething problems as it was expected. But since then, we've sorted all those problems. Number 9, SAMREP. The department has developed an integrated electronic system for managing now the mine health and safety portfolio. The system allows for integrated and improved management of information in the mining industry. Due to the limitations of the NMPS, which was our original administrative system, a decision was taken to develop the new electronic management system. We did brief honorable members of the committee on this. Even though we have a long way to go, we are nevertheless pleased with the modest introduction that has so far taken place. Number 10, establishment of compliance inspection units within the mineral regulation. Subject to the availability of funds, we intend to establish an internal compliance inspectorate and this will be done as per the revised human resource structure of the department. This will assist in meeting the concerns of members of the public who raise the lack of compliance in the mining industry where the committee visited, you know, the Cape and other areas. And I would like to point out also that when we had this moratorium that the minister imposed last year, we then conducted a number of audits of all the licenses that are held by people in the mining industry. And those audits have revealed to us that there is a need for an ongoing compliance inspection of these licenses. Because we have discovered that quite a number of them, they get their licenses, they comply every time when they receive their licenses. But over time, they ignore all their licensing conditions. And that becomes a problem, more particularly with regard to issues of environment and other matters like social and labor plan, etc., etc. To enforce compliance and show faster implementation of social and labor plan projects, we will take urgent steps to build capacity at our regional offices. This is crucial in these centers at the coalface of service delivery. Our health and safety track record in the mining industry continues to cause great concern. As part of our occupational health and safety improvement strategy, we'll continue with our efforts together with our tripartite stakeholders at the MQA and MHSC to to address skills development and implement occupational health and safety programs in the mining industry. The department will vigorously monitor the implementation of TB, HIV, and AIDS programs in the sector. We will also constantly be monitoring and evaluating the effectiveness of occupational health and safety programs at mines through inspections and audits. We are currently looking at proposals that, among others, suggest that there should be inspectors who focus only on inspections and audits, an investigative unit responsible for health and safety investigation inquiries. These proposals will come into effect once financial wherewithal issues are addressed. We will continue with our stance that if mines cannot mine safely, they should not mine at all until effective measures are implemented to safeguard the health and safety of employees. As part of implementing our strategy, health and safety will be elevated to the board of mining companies to ensure that appropriate measures are also addressed at board level. Board of directors will be required to submit quarterly reports on health and safety that include statistics and indicate measures that should be taken to prevent occupational diseases and fatalities as well as serious injuries at our mines. The Mine Health and Safety Act is being reviewed. This will be to strengthen enforcement provisions, simplify administrative system for issuing of fines, reinforce offenses and penalties, substitute and remove ambiguities, and also effect certain amendments to ensure consistency with the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act. Chairperson and honorable members, at this juncture, I would like to call upon program managers to present their priorities for 2011-2012 financial year.
Thank you very much, Cindy. Just before the program managers converse with the program, we have been joined by other members as well as the minister. Before I hand over to the minister to maybe say one or two remarks, we have been joined by other honourable members. I think they would love to introduce themselves.
Thank you, Chairperson Kenneth McClay, Northern Cape.
Thank you, Honourable McClay. Other staff members that have joined us?
I'm Sule Hasmini, the head in the Office of the Deputy Minister.
My name is Monica Zama. I'm Chief of Staff in the Minister.
Welcome. Time off and joining us. I know you had to skip a cab.
The other area which the DG has indicated is the issue of our intention to be as transparent as possible. We've introduced a new system. Part of it is to deal with the perception, which I think all of us have in our way, the perception about the department being corrupt, but also the department being inefficient when it comes to licenses. We hope with all those challenges, we have tried to improve on the department's performance. It will also reduce the turnaround time. It will also assist with lesser people dealing with the actual papers, but really trying to be electronic. And one of the key issues is that it's going to allow us and any other person, wherever you are, to be able to apply without necessarily coming to the office. So it's an improvement on our side. And it will also reduce direct contact with our regional offices, like it used to be. There'll be better contact with our regional offices because people will be expected to apply electronically. This is part of ensuring that we improve on the system, but also we reduce on the paperwork, which it was alleged by the newspapers. We don't agree with that, find the department with applications lying all over the desk. It's not true, but I think it will also take care of those kind of allegations too. When it comes to the issue of our performance in the department, when it comes to the question of capacity, we still not have a very strong department. One is that we are seen within the eyes of government and treasury as a small department, despite the challenges which we are facing. I'm raising this issue because it has a direct impact also on our budget, where we require more funding to improve the department and make it more efficient. We find that it's not as easy as we'd like to have. So those are some of the challenges which we have, but we will continue to try and deal with those issues and address them. If you look at one of the challenges when it comes to that, the number of vacancies which we have, especially in the inspectorate, the challenge we have is that the levels we employ are unable to attract those people to come in as inspectors. So these are some of the challenges which, in brief, I think we have. But our intention is to make sure that we become better with the little capacity we have, but also we brand the department as a department that is committed in improving the mining sector. One of our roles is also to try and make sure that the mining sector, particularly in South Africa, can be a sector which is competitive, but also a sector which can grow and commit itself to the economy of the country. And in that way, our international engagement, we are going to sometimes concerns raised within the investment community to make sure that we continue to be competitive, but also to ensure that South Africa can be seen as a mining destiny in the global environment. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Minister. PG, back to you.
Thank you, Jim. We'll start with program one. That's the priority.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Members. The presentation above this says, the outline there says our purpose and structure. And our purpose and structure is corporate services. I will speak to corporate services, because under program one we have other components, but I will speak to corporate services. The purpose of corporate services is to provide strategic support and management services to the Ministry and the Department of Mineral Resources. And under corporate services we have components, HR, legal services, auxiliary support, communication, and special projects. So focus areas of corporate services is both external and internal. The external focus, which has a stakeholder perspective, as we call it, focuses on skills development for the communities out there, especially vulnerable groups. We have initiatives like career awareness initiatives, where we also have information sessions to brief the communities about the opportunities out there for them in mining. We also have a responsibility as corporate services to communicate all DMR policies and programs to the community at large, and by that we mean the civil society as well as the business society. We also focus on transformation initiatives, particularly women in mining, where we try to engage, or rather to educate women, especially in mining, and providing them with maybe leads for opportunities in mining, for businesses in mining. Our internal processes also focus, as I said, on either local focus we have, both internally as in the department and externally, locally, not internationally, where we provide, we develop policies and procedures for the department with the guidance of the DPSA. We also provide legal support, where we provide a timely response, legal opinion, appeals and litigation. We also provide a security service where before anybody gets employed, especially at senior level management, where we have to vet and to do a vetting, we go through a vetting process for to check if they are competent people who can work within the DMR. The performance management development system that we have employed also is to enrich the DMR staff with regards to focusing also on their PDPs, the performance development plans, to upgrade their performance and to bring them up to speed with whatever they their objectives are, their goals and objectives are. The focus is also on learning, on development, where we have currently running an executive development program through the university through this. We also have other management programs that we run for our managers as well. But also at junior level, there are also courses that are being provided to develop our staff members. We have also an objective of reducing our vacancy rate within the department. As we all remember, the president made a clarion call at the beginning of the year to reduce the vacancy rate within the department by of this year, and I can confidently say the department is in line to achieve that objective. We also have put together as a department, attraction and retention strategy. We have a problem there, especially in retaining the skills that we have because of the competitiveness out there. We're competing with the mining industry as a department. And as such, we have had to strengthen our retention strategies, also our attraction strategies, because we are unable to attract the required skills that the department needs because of the competitive nature, as I said, of the industry. We are also in line to reduce our staff turnover rate as a department. We are
session will be covering, amongst other things, the following. We will look at the budget as well as the expenditure overview over the MTF period. Some of the challenges partly addressed by the Minister in the opening remarks. The expenditure analysis, the program, as well as just for noting, giving some feedback to the committee in respect of the findings that the AG raised in his report in the previous year. And then lastly, we'll conclude by presenting the plan for the branch for the next MTS period. This presentation can be read with page 16 of the strategic plan in as far as the budget is concerned, and page 22 to 25 in as far as the actual program plan is concerned. The budget for the GMR allocated for the 2011-2012 financial year yet to be appropriated is sitting at 1.036 billion, and this is a 11% growth compared to the 2007-08 financial year, and we're expecting that this would grow by about 5.8% over the medium term, that is from the current year to 2018-2014. And just in terms of how the budget is further broken down, it's shared between the DMR internally as well as the entities reporting to the minister on a 58-42% ratio, respectively. We are happy to report that for the 2010-11 financial year, we have recorded an underspending of just under 1%, 0.12%, which translates to about 1.2 million rand out of a budget of 995 million that was appropriated for the GMR. So this is a trend that we have maintained over the last couple of years, where we have recorded an underspending of less than 5% materiality threshold, and we plan to continue on that line. We have already submitted a request for rollover of some of the remaining funds with National Treasury in April. And just moving on to some of the challenges that we have experienced in as far as budgeting and spending is concerned and the corrective measures that have been put in place. There has been, over the last couple of years, a number of budget cuts where Treasury was aligning spending back to ensure that we minimize issues like a deficit on the budget. Where the department has been affected by this particular budget cut to a tune of about 70 million over the medium term. And internally, we also picked up that there was some misalignment between our budget and the operational plan, which we have rectified, and I'll talk to some of the measures we implemented to rectify that. One such measure being the development of plans, which we have just finalized for the 2011-12 financial year, where we now, on a monthly basis, our projections would be informed by the actual requirements from different branches as opposed to using historical information. The other one was to get this particular spending plan signed off at the highest level within the branch to make sure that all the branches are aware of the spending plans and the responsibilities attached to the budget. We've also prepared our drawing requirements that were submitted to Treasury on the basis of this spending plan that we submitted. The next slide presents a table that
salary increase of about 5.8 per annum. This is just enough to cover inflation increase. So we are hoping that through our engagement with Treasury, we'll be able to be allocated more funding to deal with some of the other issues that are contained in our plan. The increase for the MTF currently relates mainly to a 40 million the allocation for improvement on conditions of service, which is mainly salary-related expenditure, and another additional allocation of 30 million for the water treatment technology, which was allocated to MINTEC. The expenditure analysis program, on program one, we are expecting a 7.5 increase over the MTS period from 223 million to 274. And this is mainly attributable to the expansion in the establishment post the split of the Department of Minerals and Energy to Energy and Mineral Resources. Because what then happened, we had to go back and analyze our structure to make sure that Program 1 is able to support the underlying function, and that restructuring process resulted in this change in terms of budget allocation. On the mine health and safety inspectorate, we are seeing an increase of about 76.5% per annum from 142 million in 2011 to 170 million in 2013 and 2014. And this is mainly due to inflation-related adjustments. There were no additional funding allocated to this program. On mineral regulation, expenditure is expected to decrease from 212 million to 175 million in 2013-14. And this is mainly due to the transfer of the rehabilitation of derelict and owner-led mine function, which has moved from program 3 to program 4, which is mineral policy and profile. So the equivalent amount would be seen on the other program as an increase. So it's only a technical item. On mineral policy and promotion, we are expecting an increase of about 11.3%, and as I said earlier, part of that increase relates to the transfer of the funding related to rehab from Program 3 to Program 4, as well as the new allocation that I spoke about on water treatment technology of about 30 million that has been allocated to MINTEC. And lastly, the inflation adjustment just to cover the increase in the cost of goods and services. The next slide looks at the key issues that were raised in the DMT annual financial statement report by the Auditor General. While the report was issued on DMT, we believe that some of the issues we needed to go back and look at our department. So although this year would be marking the first annual report by the Department of Mineral Resources, we need to make sure that we start on a clean slate and then develop a plan to deal with some of the issues that we raised today. And starting off with the issue around the receivables for departmental revenue, which was raised as a qualification in the Auditor General report, we have since implemented a number of initiatives, starting with a monthly review session
important to the system that the minister and the CG spoke about, because there is quite a close relationship between our licensing process and the revenue generation processes. So the user requirements for this particular system have already been completed, and the service provider has already been appointed. They signed a contract, so we just need to finalize the development process. Because most, the main issue, even in terms of the AC report, was that we were lacking in terms of having an electronic system to manage the whole process of debt management related to prospecting fees. The other issue related to the payment of invoices within 30 days, where we've implemented about three measures. Firstly, with the centralization of invoices to one unit to avoid a situation where if an individual receives an invoice and he goes on leave, then that invoice based on that individual's interest for longer than the period that is required. So all suppliers were informed that from that point going forward, they had to submit their invoice to one central location. So that we have a register and we are able to track the movement of those invoices. We have also looked at our contract management processes and really tried to improve the turnaround time that from the point that the invoice is received to the point that it gets paid. We have now gone and shortened that period. And I'm happy to report that we are seeing some good progress as far as that is concerned. As far as the regular expenditure is concerned, we reported in the Auditor General report there was an issue around centralization of the management of this particular expenditure and reporting Treasury and the AG. We have now put in place a central register for monitoring all irregular expenditure, and that process has been implemented since June of last year, and it gets regulated on a monthly basis just to make sure that we take the necessary corrective measures prior to submitting a request for condonement to the Director General and reporting accordingly. The AGM, National Trader. I will now move to the last part, which is the priority areas or the focus areas for the branch in the 2011-2012. We've got about 15 focus areas, which are listed in this slide and the next one. But just to go into just a little bit of detail in terms of what we mean when we say provide reliable, timely information. Here the focus will be on those compliance related reports, like reports listed in the CFMA, the annual financial statement, monthly reports to traders. So we have put this as part of our focus area that we need to improve the turnaround time for supplying this particular information and meet the deadline for it. We will also be putting in a lot of effort into improving our service delivery, that is turnaround time for payment of invoices and other services that we do within a branch. And to gauge our performance and our target here is about 90% availability at any given point in time. We would obviously try and improve that as the year goes by to make sure that we have 100% availability at all times. Facilities is one of the areas that we are responsible for, and with regard we are looking at issues like office accommodation and other tools of trade like computers and so forth. So we want to make sure that we have a plan to align the provision of that to the requirements of the various line function branches. We'll also be looking at increasing the percentage of our procurement spend that goes to the targeted groups, the previously disadvantaged. We have been doing this for a number of years, and we want to continuously relook at that and implement measures to improve our time percentage. We'll also be reviewing and implementing new policies aimed at improving our turnaround time, as I mentioned earlier, but also the alignment with the business objectives, particularly looking at the integration of ICT systems and leading to a reduction in the licensing costs that we spend. Our people will also be engaging on a number of training initiatives. And like corporate services, we also have a measure to ensure that there is a reduction in the number of the cases within the branch. The attraction and retention of staff, we'll also be looking at that in terms of what measures can be put in place to reduce the staff turnover, but also looking at developing our people through training and things like that. As far as our budget and expenditure is concerned, we'll be looking at aligning our budget to the strategy, and I'm happy to say that this process has already been started and partly finalized. We'll also be looking at reducing the number of assets that get lost or go missing before the time for disposal. Cost management is also important to us. We'll be targeting a variant underspending that is within the accepted norms, but also efforts put in place to reduce certain wasteful expenditure. And lastly, as far as promoting corporate governance, there are a number of initiatives and measures that we'll be looking at, amongst others, the internal audit work that gets done. We measure ourselves in terms of how many issues get reported more than once, and our target is to have zero in that respect. And the Auditor General report, we have an action plan, as I mentioned earlier, but we also have a compliance checklist on the CSMA to make sure that we are indeed compliant. And that basically concludes the report on the plan for the grant. Thank you.
Program 2, please just summarize the priorities and then make a reference to the plan plan for the honorable member, I believe, of the plan. So, yeah.
Okay, thank you, Tisha. Honorable Chair and Minister. These are the five priorities or strategic objectives that we've identified, and they can be read also with page. In terms of the first strategic objective, to promote health and safety, and this will be achieved through the percentage reduction of facial injury fatalities and dangerous occurrences. The dangerous occurrences are incidents which do not result in casualties, but have a potential to harm employees. And there's certainly a 20% year-on-year improvement in all of those. And the initiative to support that particular measure, the first one, as you can see, is to conduct investigations and inquiries to ensure that there's appropriate measures implemented to prevent the recurrence of accidents. And we also conduct qualitative inspections and audits to assist with the promotion of health and safety, and implement the health
measures to be adopted to ensure improvement. And next is to implement the enforcement guidelines, which recently has been popularized within the spectrum. The guideline ensures that there is a consistent and transparent approach by all inspectors, for instance, the issue of inspection. And we believe that it will also assist in achieving a significant reduction on safety and health related matters. And we also disseminate health and safety information. This will be done through newsletters and regional tripartite programs to enhance health and safety. And lastly, as it has previously indicated, we are in the process of reviewing the legislative framework to strengthen the enforcement capacity and remove ambiguity from the law. And in terms of the second strategic objective, that is to contribute skills development, the inspectorate administers relevant examinations in terms of the provisions of the Minor Health and Safety Act. The major concern has been on the low pass rate as a result of poor training and preparation of the candidates, and that intends to ensure that there is a percentage increase in the number of applications, and the target that we set out was 10%. One of the initiatives that we have planned to do is to engage with the MQA and other relevant stakeholders to ensure proper accreditation of the training space provided to us with the candidates. And we also came up with an action plan, which includes engaging with universities and the Ministry of Technology classes in the review of our administration of the exam. We believe that is also important. And the third strategic objective is to ensure compliance with further services in the agreement. And we currently have two, one with Vex University for training our current instructors on our activities, and another with the Gold Seal for impacting practical experience on the ninth sector and other stakeholders as well. And we intend to implement and monitor the SLA in conjunction with the two stakeholders. And we intend to achieve 100% adherence level to all those SLAs. And again, we develop and maintain internal process as the next strategic objective. And I think this way also assists with the ensuring that there is a consistent and transparent approach by all the inspectors to make that communication the order issues actually that will be taken. And lastly, on that slide, is the improved panel of management, mainly regarding our administration on all the applications that we consider that they should be done timely. The next slide speaks to the capacity within the department, especially the inspectorate. Through the request of the minister, we have initiated the process of restructuring the inspectorate to enhance the capacity to enforce the provisions of the law. The ratio of inspector posts to the mining employees is about 1 to 2,500, and we believe that by looking at this, will also assist us in ensuring effective coverage. The mining sector is expected to grow mainly in the northwest, in Mpopo, Mpumalanga, and the northern region. And we are looking at splitting, for instance, the northwest, the Rustenburg, and the sector of into two independent offices, so that we should have a better program in those lands, especially in the mining sector. And we are also currently finalizing the process of seeing the health human chief director and director board to advance the focus on health issues, as you might have seen in the media, they are becoming more prominent, and we believe that this will also affect our future. And last but not least, last slide, the Labour Inspector program has assisted in improving the vacancy rate in the region. We currently have placed about 90 in our regional office.
With regard to mineral regulation, the presentation we read in consultation or in conjunction with the pages 45 to 52 of the strategic plan.
sustainable resource management, ensure implementation of transformation policies, monitor and enforce compliance, develop and review internal processes, and the reduction of major environmental liability and financial risk. Around the first outcome of equitable and sustainable benefits from mineral resources, the key strategic objective being promotion of job creation. The measure that we put in place is the prioritization of applications, especially mining rights, in view of the benefit that you derive from getting those rights defined by the tool, because you create more jobs and result in economic development. And to do this, we've also revised time frames and implemented the job online system. And then, because once we have implemented mining rights, other elements such as social labor plan kick in for your SME development, as well as the implementation of your local economic development project also kick in. And the derived benefits go to that job creation. Around the second strategic objective of promotion of sustainable resources and management, the measures that we put in place, they basically relate to the education processes that will underpin our regulatory processes around work processes, social labor plans, ensuring that adjudicated environmental management plans and programs link and you are able to have a relativity to rights issues. And we verify sites through compliance inspection. What we'll be doing throughout our presentation is to emphasize the issue of compliance inspection, because we have moved away from the era of ordinary processing applications towards ensuring that there is compliance, because this is the new era to ensure that rights holders are accountable and always act in a responsible manner. With regard to the strategic objective of reducing state environmental liability and financial risk, the measures that we have in place, the ones related to identified rights and all those with inadequate financial protection. And the initiatives that were put in place is to conduct the accelerated inspection and issue such trial notices and orders in case of non-compliance. The DG earlier on spoke to the audits that were conducted during the moratorium, and they indicated that those that we found not to have complied with various trial notices. That is the way to go, and that is what we'll be doing going forward. The other measure that we put in place is to ensure that the percentage of mines issued is closure without residual state liability. Here the initiative is to ensure that there are no residual liabilities that remain for the state before any closure is issued. Around the strategic objective of ensuring that the implementation of transformation policies, the measures that we've put in place is one, the number of rights granted to new historically disadvantaged South African entities or South Africans, number of consultations that we're going to be doing in communities, just to address some of the issues that keep on crossing up relating to communities, in the two workshops that keep on convening and conducting, and also identifying opportunities that exist within the procurement space. And to this end, with regard to the procurement space, to ensure that as a non-league, we do adjudication on mining rights, we also do workshops and do inspections as and when it arrives, so that we can ensure that information that is supplied to us is accurate. But also information that we're gleaning from various workshops. now done is the new online system enable us to better monitor compliance in time frame, because in the past we used to be the generalization of criticism that we are delayed in processing applications. But with the new system that we put in place, if there is a complaint or an allegation of such, we are able to go to the specific area and identify who might have caused if there is indeed anything like that, a delay in processing that particular application, which we think is a major improvement and speaks to what the minister was alluding to earlier around transparency in how we are conducting business in the mining forum. I need to also, in conclusion, definitely comment around the internal process relating to capacity to indicate that the prime structure has been realized to ensure that there is greater focus on compliance and to also create the compliance inspect rate, which will be located at our regional offices, increasing the number of chief directors and so on, so that there is a targeted focus on compliance inspection. Thank you.
The last one.
Thank you, BT, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Our priorities focus on five key areas: promote investment in the mineral sector, promote sustainable use and management of resources, ensure transformation in the sector, develop and review internal processes, and improve turnaround time. A detailed report is found on pages 55 and 62 of the departmental report. In terms of promoting investment in the sector, we will measure our success in achieving this particular objective by a percentage growth in fixed capital investment in the sector. In order to be able to do this, we are going to be conducting economic research in order to document the performance of the industry, both domestically and internationally, and we will disseminate the results of our research in a number of publications that we produce, including directories, bulletins, and also our summit. We are going to be embarking in investment promotion activities or participating in investment promotion activities, including mining Indaba, China Indaba, Africa Down Under. And we are going to be implementing the provisions of the mining sector strategy, which seeks to promote competitiveness and meaningful transformation in the sector. We are going to be developing implementation plans for the beneficiation strategy. Our primary focus is going to be on the selected value chains that we have identified to illustrate the intrinsic value of beneficiation for the economy. We will be focusing on four state beneficiation areas together with economic relationships that are required to support four state beneficiation. We have identified in our strategy, next slide please. We have identified in our beneficiation strategy 10 commodities and 5 value chains as they are depicted there. So the implementation plan would focus on ensuring that we identify the challenges as well as the strategic interventions that are required to overcome challenges, so that we are able to implement those value chains. Next slide. This graph depicts the relationship amongst employment beneficiation and contribution to the GDP. We use this graph in order to illustrate the significance or the importance of a beneficiation. creating our commodities in the country. But currently, we are using the case of Kumba, which is currently employing about 14,000 people, and their contribution to the GDP is about 15.6 billion. And if we look at the steel mills, which consume about 20% of Kumba's production, they employ 12,800 people, and their contribution to GDP is 12.7 million. Look at the fabricators, the converters, which employ 85,000 people and contribute 25 billion to the GDP. And the last stage, which includes automotive construction, any sector that use steel and steel-related products, you can see that that's basically the manufacturing sector. They employ about 2.5 million, and their contribution to GDP is about 216 million. Our argument is that if we can increase, the levels of benefit or the amount of commodities that are beneficiated in the country, we would be able to increase the levels of employment as well as the sector contribution to the GDP. Next slide, please. In order to promote sustainable resource use and management, we are going to be providing a framework for mine environmental management, which includes developing policies, guidelines, and procedures, which will be developed under our MEM service, that is the mine environmental management service, which includes guidelines on environmental impact assessment, environmental management monitoring, as well as closure of mines. We during the financial year, we are planning to rehabilitate 12 sites, and those sites are depicted in the next slide. Our decision to focus on this because of the hazards that they pose for the surrounding community. Next slide, please. As mine drainage management, we are working in collaboration with the Department of Water Affairs and Department of Science and Technology. We are doing research and we have already started implementing solutions to deal with these channels, including building canals and sealing off abandoned sites. We are also busy with the treatment of AMD. In terms of promoting transformation in the sector, we are currently reviewing the MPRDA, as well as the Mine Health and Safety Act. We already have the bills. We're hoping that they'll be able to go through Parliament during the current financial year. We are also going to be embarking on area studies and regulatory impact assessment in order to evaluate the effectiveness of our policies and interventions in terms of achieving the desired results. I did indicate earlier on that we will be implementing our mining strategy, which focuses on competitiveness and transformation. We are currently, as part of the implementation, conducting policy impact studies, implementing research and development partnerships at regional and international levels. The DTU spoke at length about our initiatives to implement our small-scale mining strategy. We will be focusing on that with a view to trying to improve the areas around the poverty, the rural poverty nodes. In terms of internal processes, we will be developing and reviewing internal processes, and we will measure our success in achieving that by looking at the number of processes that will be reviewed during the current financial year. Our primary objective of this, obviously, is to improve our level of efficiency. And lastly, we would improve our turnaround time. We would ensure that we adhere to prescribed time frame in terms of dealing with the issues that are referred to our branch. I thank you.
Honorable Chair, that is our case.
Thank you very much, PJ, and all the presenters. Honorable members, now your turn to engage. If you don't want to engage, we'll also be happy. If you want to engage, we'll also be happy. Let me see the hands. Honorable Mkoni, Honorable Lees, Honorable Abrams, Honorable Mkoni.
I think I must confess that from the start that I haven't studied this document yet. As a chairperson, our patients might be, some of the answers might be in the book that might not be able to have seen it because our majority has seen it. I just, in this document, you know the hectic schedule of the construction. However, what do we need? My first question, Chairperson, I see on the strategic plan. Well, let me say, I should congratulate the department on the strategic plan. I see that they've got all the programs, all the accounted targets, and the cost, of which actually it really tells us where the department is going, and you can effectively monitor the department. Because sometimes you find that there's a performance target and orders that's an objective. Once you find that you don't know how much that objective is going to cost, what are the measurables, how much it's going to cost and all this. So I see the department has shown all the strategic objectives, the measurables and the cost of which actually makes these things much easier, more transparent. My first question, Chairperson, is just an overall question. Rather than basically a question to say, according to the MPRDA, if I remember well, it said by 2014 there must be 26% black ownership in mining. How far is the department in the target? Then my second question, Chairperson, is on the SMMEs in mining. Now, basically, mining is capital, right? Capital intensive sort of a sector. You won't be able to have a small miner actually in a gold mine, or in platinum, or in coal for that matter. Yes, might have small scale miners as far as alluvial diamond is concerned. My question is, how does actually the department see these SMMEs in mining being successful, bearing in mind all these heavy equipment that you might need, or all these high minerals of capital that you need, you know, to think yourself in those days when I'm mining or say number 5 even right, like a small miner, you won't be the social labor plan. You know that the mining industry is a private sector, that we put regulations, the government for regulations. But how enforceable are the social labor plans? Just recently, you were with youngsters, particularly in a bulk of containers hired by mining areas around the same thing, I think, in Limpopo, just before election. I just want to find out how can we enforce the social labor plan if possible, because you know that the mining industry is a private sector. And my fourth question, Jefferson, is on the administration. On the administration problem one, on vacancy rate. I did that for 183 under my section have vacancies. I just want to find out out of those 183, how many actually are health inspectors? Or we need vacancies for people to inspect on the mines, especially for safety. So I think that South Africa is just one of the people or one of the countries that are killing people in mining.
Unfortunately,
the terminology, that there are a lot of accidents happening. My second last question, Jefferson, is on quarterly targets. I see that even on your quarterly targets for 2040, 80, 120, are they accumulative or is each quarter you are saying you do so much? As I read it, it seems they are accumulative, I just want to get it on this. And lastly, I see that in all the programs, you've got this enhanced DMR culture. It's in every program, you see that, but that we've got this objective of enhancing the DMR structure, you know, retaining staff, and the like. Isn't that the threat to duplication of all the programs? It shouldn't be a threat to just a program on administration under HR. In each, I'll try to get the cost, I can see the cost as well. Does it initiate any program that cost? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. To you, it's very comprehensive and difficult to deal with in a few steps. And I don't want you to present a case, particularly as the advocate has done, but it's helpful to respond in as little an adversarial way as I can. But it is unfortunate, though, that the opening paragraph of the DG presentation puts the emphasis on transformation and then as well as economic growth. And clearly economic growth is what's required to achieve transformation, but the real problem with this talk about transformation in this particular industry is the fact that it is awash with irresponsible declarations by politicians about nationalization. And there's nothing here to say whether transformation actually includes nationalization. And I believe that we need the investment, particularly the foreign direct investment. You can go about all your plans as much as you like, but unless those issues, those critical issues of nationalization are clearly resolved, there will be no great direct investment. And of course, it's also unfortunate to use the term historically disadvantaged South Africa, where in fact, Honourable Mboni quite correctly puts it as black South Africa. Let's not kid ourselves. interested, DG, to hear from you how you plan to achieve the creation of 140 jobs. How did you arrive at 140,000 jobs? How did you arrive at this figure?
Was it which finger did you say, or was there some kind of carefully calculated way that you're going to achieve this 140,000 jobs?
Then on page 8, you refer to the African, I think it is AEM and F mining company, standalone. Who is it going to report to? And what exactly is it going to do? What is its business? And on page 9, I'm interested to know the rehabilitation, the 5 sites and the 10 sites. Where are they? There was again in one of the other programs reference to that, so perhaps there's a repetition there. The acid mine drainage report, which you apparently have presented to Cabinet, when will we see a copy of that report? And then it's interesting, you know, the mining industry is one where we do look at accidents on a regular basis, and all of us want to eliminate accidents, injuries, deaths on the mining industry. But in reality, it's actually quite a statement. And yet we don't put the same emphasis onto other forms of injury and death in our society. So when you say cannot mine safely, how do we define cannot mine safely? They must not mine. I mean, that to me is a generalization, and we need to define it fairly closely if we're going to talk in those terms. I say this because my son is a highly qualified geological engineer working on coal mines in the Mpumalanga, and he gets very frustrated when I say to him, hey, you're in a very unsafe industry, you should be doing more. And he jumps down my throat as quickly as he can and says, very often, people breaking the rules who actually cause them, because they're going for maximum output. Instead of leaving columns 2 meter by 2 meter as these designed the mine, they go in and they take an extra half meter out to get the extra output. And he says, how then can I be held responsible, or the board of the company be held responsible when that kind of thing happens? So what I'm moving on to there is there's a great emphasis in here on putting the responsibility at high levels in mining companies. And yet there seems to me, anyway, to be no emphasis put at the coal face, let's use that word, where people simply do not adhere to the rules. And so some of them get injured and killed, whereas others get away with it and go away and continue. They don't get prosecuted, nothing happens. I'm asking the question. That shouldn't be a statement. That should be a question. You can rephrase it. I'm somewhat concerned about the certification increase. We're talking about increasing certification rather than increasing or assisting people to achieve the standards of education that are required to maintain the safety and efficiency of mining. So I'm not sure that I understand exactly what we're talking about there. I'd hate to see education standards drop so we have more mining personnel who then create more unsafe conditions. I'm just a bit concerned about that. The CFO, it's fascinating to hear you talk about monitoring irregular expenditure and getting condemnation. Surely you should be saying no irregular expenditure. If you do it, you get prosecuted in whatever way is appropriate, but condemnation to me just shouldn't be part of your strategy. At all. You shouldn't be talking about condemnation. So, you know, that kind of says it's okay, you just give a good explanation and then we'll apply it to the DG or the minister, whoever gives condemnation, and it'll be okay. And so I'm concerned about the language used there. I know these things happen and one has to be fair about it. But let's not go into it saying, yes, we'll condone, but that's the impression I'm getting. Chairman, those are my questions for now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Reese, Honourable Ayler.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Yes, I'd like to know what method do you use to communicate to
And also, what projects do you have for the balance group, and if you can identify and break down what is balance, because sometimes we use the word, but it's a different story. And then what projects do you have for women in mining, and how many women have benefited through this project? And also in housing, I see you've identified 12 owned mines. Is there no such mines in housing? If yes, why are
those projects? Can the honourable member
slow down? Slow down. Okay.
I think he's telling you election mode, but come back to parliamentary mode, please.
It's the clock time mode, man. Okay, fine, let's start again. Yes, I'd like to know, how do you identify these mines, and if there are any in housing, why haven't you identified, because I'm sure they are. It's the top, okay. Yes. What methods do you use to communicate to the community when you have skills development initiatives? What projects do you have for founders of groups? And if you can give me a breakdown on those groups. And also, what projects do you have for women in mining? And how many women have benefited through this project? Then, also, is there no, my question is there no autonomous mine in housing? If the answer is yes, why haven't you identified these mines in housing, and why are they not included? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Abrams. Honorable Gunther.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm very happy that the Minister is here, and I want to thank her, because, you know, I've got, this, like other members, a lifelong battle to convince ministers to come to the NCOP. And thank you, Minister, for that. I was hoping to see the Deputy Minister, not because he's from the Northern Cape, but just also that we can engage on with him. But anyway, thank you, Minister. Okay. This report is a very comprehensive report, and there's lots of issues that we must deal with in a relatively short time, so it's not always so easy to engage on these issues. But if I can contextualize my input regarding the perception that was created in the last year by various activities in South Africa, it firstly had to do with the whole debate about nationalization. And I must say that I think the minister defended the government's position very well. But unfortunately, as the Honourable Member Lee referred to, that this continuous debate by some of the youngsters that I sometimes tend to get the name, it's not doing the industry good and well. And we know the debate, but it's not the government position, it's the ANC position. But the ANC is the government. And so for me, it creates uncertainty. It makes the investors nervous. So that was the first sort of general trend during the last year or so. The second one was the whole issue about the transfer of the old order mining rights to the new order, and the court case between Kumba and Imperial Crown Trading, and so on and so forth, which once again tainted the image of South Africa in terms of how do you do business in South Africa. The perception, that's the perception, is that if you link to the right people, you qualify to get mining rights and so on. Now we know the matter is in case, and our learned advocate might tell us it's such indicating and whatever. But I want to make the point that linked to nationalization, the second one is this issue. Then the third issue is the issue about the acid mine drainage water. And although the department only got, it seems, a relatively small role in this process, it's got the impact on your department. So if I can conceptualize these three issues to say that, in general, your department, Minister and DJ, has got a very, very important role in creating an environment where investors would say, right, we can invest with confidence. And I must say that because of these three, maybe there's others, I'm not so sure that climate has been created. So I want, if the minister or the DG wants to respond to that in general terms, I would appreciate that. I want to come to about five specific issues from the Northern Cape. The first one, DG, is my old song about the state diamond trader. When is the state diamond trader coming to the province where it's supposed to be? It's certainly not Gauteng. It's there where the five NPOs is in Kimberley. So when is the state diamond trader coming there? Or is there any chance, or am I just sort of chasing a wild goose that we'll never get? The second issue is, I see there was a differentiation between various mine offices. You referred to Rustenburg and I think Klerksdorp and so on. But we know that the main mining activities currently is taking place around the Katu area. Wouldn't it make sense that the department consider opening a regional office in Katu to address many issues, including the health and safety aspect? Then the third issue is to do with the issue that's recently in the news regarding the rehabilitation on the west coast where De Beers wants to sell some of its mines to other developers and mining entities and so on. Rehabilitation in terms of the mining charter is one of the priorities. But unfortunately, it seems that even a big company like De Beers is once again renovating on that very important aspect. What is your opinion about that? The second last issue is the one about the Zama Zama. I think one of our first visits was to Belcom. What is the current situation? In the news, there was a lot of reports about the police being involved and seems that there were some positive activities. So what is the latest situation regarding the Zama Zamas and the gold theft in general? And then the last issue is related to the beneficiation. Is the department involved in the gold chain development in Kimberley? Because the feedback that I've got regarding that activity there, that it's not successful. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Cunningham.
Honourable Chair, thank you very much. Thank you, Minister, for being with us. It's always good to see you and have you with us. And all the members of the department, when you moved in this morning, we nearly panicked because there are so many of you here. Nevertheless, we understand that you take your job seriously. We just hope there's enough Indians in the department as well to do the job. Thank you for the presentation. DG, you briefly touched on small-scale mining, and I know the Minister has said that the small-scale mining has an environmental issue. And I want to know, has this been addressed anywhere? I have a question about that, specifically on the West Coast side, and also then in any other project that you may envisage. I would like, and I actually have a big problem with this. I want to know, Corporate Services Administration, who is responsible for answering our questions in our parliamentary questions? Because I've got a couple of questions outstanding with regard to people that are operating in mining along the West Coast with, you know, mining rights issued or licenses issued while they are there was a moratorium and it has been approved. Then there's a health and safety aspect where the nearest doctor is very far away and so on. And then, of course, one needs to first look at, for instance, now that I mentioned Alex Gore, one must look at the service level agreement on, say, health and safety and the mining there to be able to understand. But then you also mentioned that you are training something like 90 inspectors, and I can't remember if it's now for health and safety or if it's for something else. But it's fine to have 90 inspectors, but to what extent are they going to be able to do the inspections, give an honest report, another to implement and keep the people in line that are not performing. I also would like to know, in terms of the mine health and safety, where the contact office is, but I can get that for email from you people on in the Northern Cape especially. Somewhere, there was mention made of the fourth stage of beneficiation. I can't remember where. I just need to know where I can find the details on that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's too many papers here, and I've made videos and marks in it, but thank you, that's helped so long.
You'll find it somewhere over the rental, in the rental, somewhere. Minister, Department, you know, we've got this big thing coming up in December, starting on November, which is called COP 17. And I want to find out where does the department fit in? Is the department a role play in COP 17 in terms of the climate change? Everybody's talking about COP 17. We know that the Department of Environmental Affairs is driving it, or the drivers of that. So if you can just answer the TG, over to you.
Well, I will take the easy of the questions that I said and leave the most difficult ones to my boss. And if the minister is already threatening to take those questions back to me, that's fine. Honorable Nguni, according to the Act, by 2014, black ownership should be 26% in the mining industry. How far is that? You know, as I said in my presentation initially, that in accordance with the Treaty of Charter, we were supposed to do the review after 5 years, and the last review was done in 2009, because that was the 5th anniversary of the mining charter. And as a result of that, the figures that we have so far are the ones that came out of that assessment. But so much has happened between that time, which was at around about 9%, 9 to 10% at that time. Remember that we're supposed to have reached 15% by then. So at that time, the figure was at around about 9%, which was why we then decided that in the new charter, we have to set in corrective measures which are going to stay on new transactions, new meaningful transactions. Because some of the transactions happened and they also disappeared in the process. Because some of the people who were involved in these things were not genuine. That's why we're complaining about nothing as a result of the previous assessment of the charter. So what we are now doing, as I said in my initial presentation, is that the ESPROM last year, because the charter kicked in last year in September, the new charter, we are now going to do that assessment annually so that we can know our progress as we march towards 2014, as to what are the corrective measures that we need to put in place, and also understand the challenges that other stakeholders face in the process and assist them. Because we don't want this to be just a compliance issue. We regard this as a covenant that was signed by all the participating people. So we'll be doing now that assessment. That's why we are already receiving, as from next month, we'll now be receiving information which will enable us to do the assessment of the charter and see where we are. So that by September this year, we can then be in a position to do the final review of the charter. So as yet, we don't know. We only know the figure, which was 9%, because I don't want to suck it out of my tongue. SMEs in the mining, capital sectors, sector. How does the department... Yes, we know this. You know, when opportunities open up for everybody in the mining industry,
belief of everybody that everybody has the capability to be involved in the mining industry. And as a result of that, you know, there were very high expectations that every Tom, Dick, and Harry would be involved in the mining industry as long as they want to get involved in business. Only to find out that mining is a totally different kind of a business undertaking. It's therefore a long haul. You have to put in money there for a very long time before you get returns, unlike other businesses. Which is why we saw some of the unpalatable tendencies that existed insofar as the are concerned when people started to try and cash in licenses. It's learned because those are the people who went there without understanding and knowing what it means to be involved in mining. They thought that it was something that where you can simply get short-term returns within a very short space of time. Unfortunately, the nature of the house mining is not like that. So that's why what we are now doing is to say to the people, don't think that because this is small-scale mining, therefore you can also be able to do the work. Because you still carry the responsibilities of rehabilitation, of environment, you still carry the responsibilities of funding and mining and all those. So the strategy that we have developed now, the small-scale mining strategy, is supposed to deal with exactly those issues. How do we assist these people to be technically equipped so that they can then be able to develop projects that would be bankable, that can then enable them to go and raise money? Because at some stage, they want hope that we as DMR will be providing funds, will be funding small-scale mining. We don't do that. People still have to go there and raise capital for themselves. They still have to go there and do EMPs by themselves. They still have to go there and do mining plans. They still have to go there and do mine and safety plans that will enable them to mine safely. So all those responsibilities are still there. So the strategy is to equip them to be able to do that. We know that at the end of the day, we won't be able to get everybody at a level where they can go in, but there will be some people who will be able to go in there. So that's what the strategy is dealing with right now. How enforceable is the social and labor plan? The social and labor plan becomes part and parcel of the licensing condition of the license holder. So, since the license conditions, therefore, constitute the compliance requirements of the license holder, failing which, if you don't comply with those, the license can be revoked, it becomes enforceable. So the social and labor plan is indeed enforceable. Now, the problem in the park has been that we didn't have the inspection capacity in the department. The only inspection capacity that we had in the department was for mine health and safety, not the licensing part of it, which is why now we're beginning to develop that capacity. Where will then be able now to do an ongoing process? On an ongoing basis, we'll do inspections. And we don't wait until the minister has imposed the moratorium and we then go and conduct audits. What we'll do now, there will be a branch or a directorate or whatever that component will be in the department, that will be conducting license compliance inspections almost on an ongoing basis. It will form part and parcel of the business plan of that company. So that's what is going to happen now. That's why in some instances, people, when they are coming to apply, they will say that here's our social and labor plan, we'll build 24 houses, we'll do that, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And on the basis of that, we grant the license. And they don't do that. But because we didn't go and post-granting, we didn't go and see whether these people are complying with what they had said that they are going, it was possible for people to get away with this matter. So this is what now the minister is saying, that we are now going to stop, because we are going to make the licensing, we are not going to compromise in terms of upholding the license. Admin vacancy rate.
let us, I think, since I will answer that at a later date, quarterly report, you will answer that, Kofifa. And enhancing the structural program, all the line functions, they are also saying that. You know, we took a conscious decision that says that management is the responsibility of every manager in the department. And therefore, we cannot take management and locate it only in one component, which is HR or corporate services. Corporate services must just be a service provider and the provenance of management policies for these managers who are line managers. Because once you start doing that, these people will think that they are to issue out licenses. Because they were beginning to develop that kind of culture where people who are in the mineral regulation thought that they are issue of licenses. Those are in mine, who are in mine health and safety thought that they are going to inspect mine. Those who are in whatever component thought that they are going to have the aligned responsibility. And yet we pay them as managers. We call them managers. And they have responsibility over human beings. That is leadership position. So that's why we then diffuse the responsibility of management to all the companies. But corporate services continue being an expert advisor to all those ones. But that's why you see this structure. Because the needs of, let's say, mineral regulation are known by mineral regulation. It is the people who are in mineral regulation who know their needs. It is for them, therefore, to identify those needs. If there is a structural development that needs to be done, it's them who know that. But they must now go to HR and say, how do we do? So that's why you see it incorporated in all the components. Transformation and economic growth. I'll leave the issue of nationalization to the minister. Transformation and economic growth. We you know, as the stakeholders in the mining industry, in June last year, we took a conscious decision that says that it's high time now that we have to place transformation and economic growth on the same par, because we believe that one is the other side of the coin. It's the other side of the same coin. Because you cannot have a situation where you have economic growth in a country like South Africa, which doesn't get accompanied by the distribution of the benefits of that economic growth across the broad spectrum of society. So that's what we meant by that. And transformation in law and in the policies of the DMR is well defined, and nowhere does it include nationalization. As to what is happening with nationalization, the minister will deal with that, because I believe she has stepped out her head and put forward the position as to what the government's position is with regard to nationalization, more than anybody else. So she will deal with that. And again, the use of the word of the term historically disadvantaged. You see, we as poor public servants, we don't formulate laws. We find the laws having been formulated by the honourable members, and the language that we use, we derive from the laws that we apply, the laws that we find having passed by the legislature. And for obedient public servants, we don't have a choice but to use the words that have been passed on to us by our bosses, which basically is the legislature. So we derived the use of this term from you, the honorable members. And if you change it, we will continue serious problem. Creating of 140,000 jobs, how is it to be done? We have been very fortunate in the mining industry because we started collaborating long time ago. We started on a very adversarial basis, and we ended up finding each other where we have now become, you know, a sector that has a common purpose. So long before job creation, people started talking about this thing of job creation, we have already devised this strategy of saving jobs in the mining industry. And we have then said that this must not only deal with the short-term effect of the global meltdown, where we'll then be dealing only with the jobs that need to be saved, you know, as a result of the global economic meltdown. We then started saying that there will be an upturn. And during that upturn, we must then be able to take advantage of that economic upturn. And we then started this work that is called MINDEX, which started now putting, you know, mechanisms in place to ensure that we take that what's called. That's the strategy, the growth strategy that we signed on in June last year. As part and parcel of the institutional arrangement of that MINDEX, we have a task team on job creation. This task team on job creation has been looking at what is practical, what is possible, because it involves the mining industry, it involves the workers, it involves everybody. We're then looking at what is it that is possible from their plans. They are looking at their plans and say that in terms of my growth plan, I anticipate that I'll be able to open this new mine by such and such a time, and projected employees who will be employed in that mine are so many. So it was not a thumbs up or a thumbs up on a movement. It was predicated upon an objective assessment of, and the realistic assessment of the situation on the ground, and the analysis of the plan of the mining company. So that's what is happening. Unless, again, there is a divine economic intervention which will result in those operations not being opened. This is a realistic figure that the sector came up with. AEMFC, what is going to be its business? It's envisaged to be a mining company, which is basically state-owned. During the time when there was, when you have a lot of load shedding, blackouts, and brownouts, one of the main issues there was the supply of coal. South Africa solely depends on the private sector for the supply of coal to Eskom. And energy is the lifeblood of any economy. And the state is the custodian of that kind of situation, that is energy supply. And therefore, it is going to be strategic for the state to give effect to that mandate by ensuring that there is a security of energy supply. Most of the South African private companies had committed their production to long-term agreements offshore. That's why it was not possible for us at that time to get that coal that would be used for Eskom during that time. So that's why now one of the strategic considerations for the formation of the state-owned mining company is security of energy supply. That's why right now that company, you'll find that uranium and in coal, because those are what are considered to be strategic commodities for the good of South Africa as a whole, not for a particular sector in South Africa. It's going to be good also for the private sector. It will be competing with the private sector, and it will be subject to the same rules of governance as the, and of regulations as the private sector. It's not going to have any preferred advantage over the private sector, although it will be serving a public good. It will be playing the role of a public good. So, the rehabilitation side, where are they? We'll respond to that. Copy of AMD presented to cabinet. When are you when are you going to see it? You know, we have stated what our role is on AMD. It was unfortunate that at some stage I had to appear before SCOPA to answer on AMD, and it was later discovered that this is not the DMR's responsibility. But because of the fact that we believe that we also have a role in AMD, we went there and participated. And of course, we are the obedient public servants whose livelihood is funded solely by funds that are paid by the ordinary citizens of South Africa. And we respect all the institutions, therefore, that have been created for public good. We then decided to go. But the long and short of it, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, is that that report was done by that task team, taken in cabinet, approved by cabinet, and the lead department, therefore, I don't know, but the minister perhaps will, let me leave that. As to what happens in cabinet, the minister knows, because she sits there. So she will take it from there as to what happened in cabinet and what is going to happen to that report. So the minister, when she answers, she will deal with that. The question of safe mining. Okay, this is a very, very interesting question. It's a very, very indeed interesting question. Because mining, by its very nature, is risky. But there are objective standards. I'm glad that the Honorable Member Sun is a geologist who knows what are the objective standards that have been, which have been scientifically determined, therefore, and established, which are used and which should be adhered to. We know that at times, notwithstanding those standards, there are certain things that happen which could not be foreseen scientifically, you know, and therefore they don't get better in those standards. So, our definition of safe mining, therefore, is mining in accordance to those standards. And we have discovered that some of these accidents happen because people have not adhered to those standards. Now, the issue of power relations now comes into play. Because in any environment, there is somebody who has a particular responsibility and another one who has got a lower responsibility than the other. Mining will regard it as the responsibility of the company. The owner of the company must be the person who has to ensure that those things happen. Because that's what the law says. And therefore, issues relating to upholding all those standards, you know, issues of ensuring that there is adherence to those standards, they become the responsibility of the mine manager as to how they then incorporate the operation of their workforce into that equation is a matter of management decision. So the people that will hold responsible for that are the license holders, because that's what the law says. So rather than putting emphasis on the workers, because the workers are not license holders, and therefore they don't have this public relationship with the state, it's not possible for us to go and say to them that you workers at times become negligent and therefore be responsible. That should be an internal arrangement in the structure of the company as to how that gets dealt with. So that's why at the end of the day we always hold answerable those who have authority and the owners, the license holders, we know them. The people who we know at TMR are the license holders. So those are the people that we are going to move. I agree, certification. No, we don't want the issue of the standard dropping. That's why we are not doing away with the certification. We need the certification. It must be there because we want to maintain the standard. But the issue is, how do you get more people passed? It's like your education system where the matriculants that you are getting are not many. And that talks to the quality of tuition rather than the standard of education. So we're not going to lower the bar. We're going to maintain the bar, but we're going to find ways and interventions that will assist people to understand and get the number of people that we want into the workforce, but with the same standard. Irregular expenditure, no, I agree. We cannot plan for condonation. I'm sure you are just citing condonation as a mechanism that can then be used in the case of irregular expenditure. But I'm sure you also didn't pick up, because before you talked about condonation, you also talked about the disciplinary action. You call them transgressors. Yeah. It's there in the slide. So once you transgress in the public service, there is punishment that gets visited upon you. So please, honorable members, be rest assured that even when we condone only as an exception, because you have indicated to us that it was due to circumstances beyond your control that you embarked upon that. But if it is not, you are a transgressor and we deal with you as a transgressor. So I think, that's the one. Method of communication with the communities. The way we deal with all those women, and how many women, and the ownerless minds and how they, and why are they not included, we deal with that. Perceptions, we said last year. Honorable Sinclair, you're right. The minister has been having roadshows all over the world. During those roadshows, she had to explain to the people there, to the investors there, because all the investors were concerned about exactly what the debate on nationalization, the Kumba case, you know, the model. And we know that those are the incidents that become a provenance of some of the perceptions that people have. But if you don't understand, it's easy for you to form a perception around a particular incident, like the Kumba case. It's up to the care, yes. But there is a very, very important principle that is in there. The principle of equality before the law. That's number one. And number two, the principle of the independence of the South African Church. deft decisions that have been taken by the American. But we live in a constitutional democracy. Rather than for people to see the depth of democracy in South Africa, they see this as a negative. But for me, this is a positive. Because it means that whoever is involved, you know, people keep on saying, talking about the connection, and looking at connections in the negative sense. But the crux of the matter is that even if there are people who are connected, you can still go to court and challenge that decision, and you not being banished from this country or arrested. So that's the positive out of this. And I think that's how we have to begin to sell these things, that there will always be disputes. These disputes will always go to court. These disputes will always result in disagreements in the interpretation of the law. As a result of these decisions that are being taken, people will always be contesting. Does it mean, therefore, when there is contestation, it means that there is a threat to security of tenure? Indeed not. For me, it shows that there is indeed protection in South Africa, because we are still going to have many of these cases. Those ones became prominent, but there are still others which have not been made prominent, you know, which are as a result of these disagreements that we have. But we know that this is something that we have to deal with, because these are the perceptions that we have to deal with. That's why when the minister went on the Herald Show abroad, she had to take with her all the stakeholders, the mining, the captains of the mining industry, as well as the union, so that they can then be able to explain these issues there. So we will leave this to the courts so that they can then decide what the situation is. Including acid mine drainage, by the way, it is a problem, because people believe that, you know, this is no longer a good the jurisdiction for investment because of all those things. So that the thing that we need to do as South Africa Incorporated. You know, because according to my record, we don't have outstanding written questions. That's why we have to send the parliamentary officer to go and find out what is happening. Because we monitor this every Monday at EFCO.
Don't know what is their plan. We read about it. And I am aware that
are alive to that particular aspect. That's a big concern. Especially for myself, I know, and looking at some of the trends which have occurred, it is a challenge for new owners when it comes to own mine. I said I must deal with that one of TPL. And the other one is the issue of Velcom. There's a lot of progress in Velcom, lots of arrests, better management, but we have not reached the point where we'll say illegal mining is not taking place. It's still taking place, but much better. You know, all the tricks and the methods used by those illegal miners, it's better. The company harmony is responding much better, and the mechanisms which they put in place are working to some extent. So that's the report that I need to say on the Velcom issue. I'm going to say that we should be abreast to what they're doing in making sure that it gets better. But yes, you've been a player who's been helping us there. But our department chief inspector is still leading. He's part of the task team with the forum, which oversees and discusses community on how best they deal with that particular area. So there is problem when it comes to illegal mining in that area. But also to take it further, I think there were also challenges in Barberton. Barberton has responded quite positively to the minimal transgression by illegal miners. I think at some point we'll be able to completely eradicate illegal mining in our country. The issue of acid mine drainage, the report, we have agreed as cabinet to make that report public. We have taken decisions on it, and also implementation plan. It's led by the Department of Water Affairs. We created an interministerial team. Now the report has been adopted by cabinet, and we have agreed that it's going to be public. Out of that report, cabinet has agreed on a plan which must be implemented by our various SOEs, which have technical expertise. That will be CSIR, under Department of Technology. You find ourselves through MinTech and Council for Geoscience, Land Affairs. You find also the University of the State. There are professors who are involved, who have expertise in the area of Minister of Planning, but we're talking about number technical team, which must implement. The University of Johannesburg is involved, University of Free State is involved, with particular, of course, the name of the professor, and Pretoria, who are participating as a task team, but also forming the technical committee, technical team, which will start implementing, not investigating, implementing a plan which will over, it will take them about 8 months in terms of the plan of action. The other issue is the nationalization. I just want to indicate nationalization is not ANC policy. It doesn't derive from ANC. If it was ANC policy, we'd be talking about that every day as the ANC, not ANC policy. It's a matter raised by the Youth League leader, because it's also not the ANC Youth League policy. They're only going to conference now in June. Whether they adopt it as a policy or not, that's another story. But at this stage, it's not ANC policy nor government policy. I think that's what we need to clarify. It's an issue raised by Julius Malema in a way that... Well, it's also the mother, it's not his mother's policy too. Not his mother's policy, because until such time, a particular structure, I
adopt specialization, then we say it's a policy to that grouping. Then they've got to escalate it. They brought it to our National General Council last year. It was never adopted. It was said it must go for a further investigation, but also learn from other parts of the world, because it must bear in mind, it cannot be, we cannot go against the world. We've got to learn, if somewhere it has worked, we must know how it has worked. But I think all of us here know that it worked at some point in some countries, and later it failed. So we've got to learn from those experiences. But I also accept that it does cause panic in the market. We can't ignore that. It is a challenge. We will continue addressing that, but also we'll continue in ensuring that we talk to investors in a way that says we are still a investment destination when it comes to mining. It is a concern, I agree with you. The first time has spoken on the matter that it's not government policy. It just also maybe to be out of order, chairperson, as we know that there was an issue just before the election of land grab. That's not ANC policy, you know. But if somebody stands up there and decides to make a particular call, it does not necessarily mean that's a government policy. He still has, he must still convince everybody in the ANC first before the government that indeed it will work. So that's the process. This year, now we have our policy conference next day. He must come to the policy conference and present facts whether this will be workable and how. So these are the issues. There are a lot of dynamics behind this particular aspect when it comes to the court itself. We must also bear in mind that we have a constitution which underpins any policy in this country. So we know that nationalization is policy which has a direct impact on the constitution. If it must happen, you must agree that you must change the constitution. And I think members of the DA are very excited that we also using these days our majority. So you said, so you, and on the basis of that, you know that some of these ambitious policies or utterances we will never achieve. So I think that in its own must make you comfortable that you're eating on our voters, on our voting, on our voters. So on the basis of that, we will not be able to meet our aspirations. So just like to say, we need to bear in mind that it's not an ANC policy when it comes to the state Diamond Trader. I know that for 4 years there has been a sort of a prompt and making hope that the trader will one day come to the Free State, and I'm going to Manjuro and Diamond, will come to Northern Cape. I had a meeting with the Premier and the MECs around this particular aspect, and I indicated that it's not going to come, because they were very worried to say, for 4 years, they've been presenting their budget. One of the aspects was that the trader is coming, and it's not coming. So we discussed it and said, no, they must go back in their budget, go tell the communities that Diamond Trader is not coming. But that does not mean the Northern Cape, as one of the major contributors to the economy of South Africa when it comes to diamond, and the industry itself, they don't have a role, they have a role. We've agreed that we're going to work together on an integrated plan. We've agreed that the trader will remain in Gauteng. I think at the appropriate time, the officials will come and present our plan. I've just created a task team, which includes some members of the industry, which will also bring on board international experts in helping us to structure a way forward when it comes to the trader itself, with an ambition for us to be like Dubai, if one has to put it that way. We also have some of the people who participated in the creation of Dubai who want to help us
also deal with the issue of the capacity and the infrastructure in the area. Because if they come and they get into the flight, which comes one, and sometimes, as we know, you know, all of us know who normally go to Kimber on a regular basis. Sometimes the flight, when it's supposed to come back to Joburg, it doesn't come back, you know, it's cancelled. So these are some of the challenges, which also don't make Kimberley become central. But I think we've discussed with the province, there are many things which we're very happy. We're also looking at how best in our plan we think Kimberley can play in the diamond industry. They've already started initiating processes, creating a training school and all that. We are one of the views which we explored is that can Kimberley become a center of excellence when it comes to training, not only for South Africa, but for the region as a whole, where they might specialize in training, creating skills for the diamond sector as a whole. So these are the issues which we took into with the province, with the hope that but we found it other to say no. When the premier made her budget speech this year, she must not refer to the trader again, but look at the proposal of an integrated approach which we will be working together with them. So I think the trader, yes, but definitely we recognize the role played by Kimberley in diamond producing for the country. The last one is the issue of make a proposal in a much more tangible way, because if Treasury agrees, then we'll be able to forge ahead with the plan which we have proposed to them. Thank you.
Thank you, Dickie. I think this question was from Honorable Van Niekerk about fourth stage of beneficiation, where she can find information about that.
That's correction, baby. I haven't got Van Niekerk. Van Niekerk.
My apologies about that. About where she can find more information about fourth stage beneficiation. Let me just explain what fourth stage beneficiation is all about. It's about the end usage of our commodities. Where exactly are they used, in the manufacturing, processes, The information can be found in our beneficiation strategy on what fourth stage beneficiation is all about. The second one was about our involvement in the gold chain development in Kimberley, whether the department is involved in that project. Again, let me clarify that our role as a department is to create a beneficiation and a policy that would facilitate the actual beneficiation activities in the different sectors of the economy. So I really do not have any knowledge about our involvement in that particular project. But I will find.
Thank you. think those are the challenges to say, to what extent can we deal with this issue. So at some point we'll have to come back and give you a report on exactly what is the situation. But where we realize that there are people, we do want to pursue our legal obligation for those people to take responsibility in terms of the law, but the issue is, will they do it at the end?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. There was a question asked by Honorable Member Abrams relating to measures that we have in place to communicate with communities on issues relating to skills development, but communities broadly. As a starting point, during the adjudication of applications that are lodged, more particularly the mine rights application, there is an onus on the applicant, which is prescribed. That consultation, and the result of such consultation is then brought to the department. Because that consultation then takes place with the community. And that way, communities are then upright. The other aspect is that there are various workshops that are held during the processing of social and labor plans, and that also enable and facilitate the dissemination of information relating to skills within communities. As a department, we also hold information sessions with various communities on a need basis, during which we are able to disseminate information on skills to various communities. And there are also structured programs that are run as part of our corporate services portfolio, where we then do specific targets to learners who are studying medicine science, as a way of also encouraging them to take up career opportunities in the area of mining. And we do this in partnership with various mining companies and our state-owned entities. We normally host two of such events every year. With regard to women in mining, I need to indicate that more particularly during the Women's Month, they are various events that we host. And I know there was one that was convened last year by the minister, during which there was a major session with over 250 women, spanning the entire spectrum of mining, from professional senior managers, including those aspiring to be entrepreneurs in mining. And outside that, also what we do is through our various industry workshops, which include women,
thank you very much, members. Your questions have been answered. Doesn't seem that we've got any other vulnerable concern.
Chair, I've got two remarks which might lead to follow-up questions and so on. The one is to do with this issue that the department is not involved in funding of small miners and so on and so on. Now, you know, we've got the privilege that we sit on these committees that deals with the government funding institutions like your NEF and all those and so on. But what we find is that the hurdle for potential entrepreneurs in these government agencies is so high that the very noble objective of transformation is not achieved because of that. Now, the point that I want to raise, wouldn't it be better for the department to look at the possibility of maybe establishing an agency itself in its midst to assist with that type of support, financial support, you know? And we experience it many times. People come up with very good ideas, they can buy equity, and they can do this and the other, but then commercial banks know, government institutions know, so on. So that is the first issue. Then, the issue about the state diamond trader. I must say, Chairperson, I prefer somebody that's honest rather than somebody that's continuously passing the buck. Now, the minister was honest today to say no, it's not going to Kimberley. That's where I'm happy about. But the part that I'm not happy about is the motivation. You know, Minister, with due respect, we will only grow the economy of this country in a sustainable fashion if we get out of Johannesburg and if we get out of Cape Town and if we get out of Durban. The challenge for U.S. government, and maybe one day my party will also be in government, I hope, despite the fact that they're losing support, but the challenge for us is to go to places where we see opportunity and through that create jobs and create sustainable environments. Now, with due respect, Minister, to come to say there's only two flights to Kimberley, and because of that, the state doesn't say that no, it can't be. I must just correct you, there's four flights. You know? Yeah. So, I think the point that I want to make is we must look out of the box in terms of engaging these opportunities. And I just thought, and it's not just me, it's the industry in Kimberley, just thought that maybe the state diamond trade would have been an opportunity to further enhance the possibilities that's been created by diamonds specifically in that case. Thank you.
Honorable Longoni.
Chair, it's not a strategic plan, but it comes across many departments. It's an issue of poverty pricing. I read in the newspaper, Atelomita is one of the most expensive steels in the West, and yet you are mining steel here in South Africa, most of them, or here in South Africa. Does the department or does perhaps the minister or cabinet as such play around the thought of perhaps not looking at the pricing? Look at the fuel, you call it the subsoil of which you extract, you know, coal. Can't perhaps, or rather, is the department, the minister,
Kimberley Act, not Kimberley, Northern Cape, has a major potential when it comes to manganese. And therefore, we have a report which we've got to look at how best is it going to impact on the Northern Cape's economy. And secondly, you know, the DG, this is a good thing.
that COPA has admitted that it will be the ruling party where they do support. I don't know if that will offend the coalition partners, the DA, further, but thank you very much, Minister and Director General and the team of Department of Mineral Resources, also to the members. Thank you very much. I think we've got a clear perspective. Our budget debate will be, I think, on the 7th of June, if I'm not mistaken. And so we'll take it from there. But on your way, the Secretary has reminded me, we clearly forgot, because everything was so interesting, that there's some tea and muffins, and I was saying that it might be that the TA might surprise us and take us out to lunch, which we will have to declare, but I don't think we will go for that at this time, Honourable Lee. But let me allow me to say thank you very much, Honourable Members, for your participation in the budget debate, and we look forward to participate further in the debate. Minister and Director General, I give you the last chance to do a parting shot, also as we said in Afrikaans, a rooftop shot.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. Thank you very much for your understanding if one is not able to come to the select committee. You know, sometimes I always refer to the chair and say, if it's in the afternoon when I'm available, I'm prepared to come. Because one has to be in cabinet. And the challenge is that when you don't go to cabinet, you miss out on some of the critical decisions which are taken and which impact on your department. So, sincere appreciation for your understanding as a committee. But also, Chair, I thought you, given that the DA now is 60 in the province.